Hi, I'm Marina Sirtis, and you're going boldly with Beyond Trek Podcast.
This is Beyond Trek Podcast, your source for Star Trek on social media and around the web. I'm Big J.
I'm Watney.
And I'm Dag, the Trivia Master. You can find us on Facebook at Beyond Trek Podcast and on Twitter at Beyond Trek Pod.
A red alert.
Only one episode left.
It's true. It's sad.
I know.
It's been such a good first season.
I know. Best first season of any Star Trek show ever.
Maybe. Not that that's the highest of bars.
Hey. Hey. We're not talking about comparing. We're just saying it's the best because we are comparing.
I was going to say, we're literally comparing.
We're comparing the best of the first seasons of Trek. Well, yeah, Lower Decks was...
Okay, all right. I'll rephrase that. We're comparing, but we're not quantifying.
Yes, comparing, not quantifying. And, well, we've got one episode left. This went fast. This went really fast.
No.
Don't worry. We have Discovery coming back in like 3 weeks, so it's fine.
Two weeks.
Oh,
two. Yeah.
There is no break in between Lower Decks and Discovery. So,
wow. All my hype has been solely focused on Lower Decks.
It has been.
Yeah.
I feel you on that, Watney. And Watney, this is Beyond Trek Podcast. I'm Big J.
What we're doing here?
We're doing a podcast.
Welcome to Beyond Trek Podcast. I'm so glad to have you.
We've got a special guest today, along with Dag, our trivia master. Mm-hmm. So we've got Renzo. Renzo's here with us, and you're going to join us on the season one, episode nine of Lower Decks review. Yes. So
Crisis Renzo, Point.
If you'd like to say hello.
Hey, y'all. I go by a Hawk Shark in Star Trek Online, many other games, Reddit itself. Happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. Hawk Shark.
So happy to have you.
Combination of two animals.
For the audience, like, Renzo has been like a part of our behind the scenes conversations and chats for months, and we're really happy that you've joined us today. This is really cool.
I've always been a huge fan, so
thanks.
We learn a lot about what goes on in like the Star Trek novels. I've never like read a whole bunch of them, but I know Renzo has. So I mean, anytime we're like talking about canon, he's like, did you know? And it's great.
Listen, the beta canon tends to fill in a lot of those little fun details that, you know, could have been in an episode, but there's only so much time to provide background. So that's what the novels do.
Mm-hmm. So true. The novels aren't beholden to budget, which neither are our hearts and minds when it comes to Trek. So
before we move forward, I just want to call out to our audience. We are going to drop every single spoiler you can imagine from this episode. Yeah. So if you haven't seen it yet, you can press pause now and come back. Or if you just want to live life on the edge, we're moving forward.
Spoiler alert, spoiler alert, spoiler alert.
And that we are. So Crisis Point, this was a very fun episode. We finally got we've had a few holodeck episodes in the first season, but none that were solely focused in the holodeck, I believe.
I think you're right. Well, but should we count the Badgie episode?
Because that was half the episode, though.
Yeah,
that was the girlfriend plot. Yeah,
That's what I mean. It's like Cupid's Errant Arrow is supposed to be just about it's the B plot. The A plot in this at this time was completely in the holodeck. It was amazing. So we start the episode off on some planet, and I don't think we ever learn what the planet name was.
I didn't catch the name of the planet.
No, I don't think they said it.
I am not sure we said the name. There's another one that gets a title bar later, but this is not that one.
Okay. Well, it's some planet. The Cerritos is orbiting. It's very pretty, kind of sandy, rocky, mountainy looking. We learn that there are rats and lizards that live on this planet together. They're tearing down an oppressive statue, which is very apt for our
heroic moment,
our current events. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mariner's like, yeah, you're gonna be free lizards, and you can no longer be eaten. And they're like, that would be nice, That sounds pleasant. They're just very like aloof about the whole thing.
I do have a question. I've got a question real fast. Weren't they supposed to be, what was the name of the delegates, those two races in season one, TNG? Remember there was the reptilian ones, reptilian looking ones. And
the Antikins.
Yeah, the Antikins. And
Soleil.
Soleil. Yeah. I thought that's what these people were, but is it just supposed to be a resemblance?
I think you're right. I think they're supposed to be Antikins, and I think that they come off as Antikins pretty well, but the lizard folks are not Sile. I don't think that they come across as serpentine enough to be the Sile.
Yeah, okay. The Sile had the cobra hood very pronounced.
Okay.
But yeah.
They're so cute.
Yeah, these
like
are
little geckos.
These are definitely.
Well, and then when they were talking about being eaten, that was the thing that made me think, and this could just be artist rendition. They may not be, because not every race looks exactly in animation as they did live TV. So that don't want to spend a whole lot of time on that. I thought that was the call.
For sure. Like trill spots.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I'm still not going to let that go. yeah. So, Mariner's like, by the way, rat guys, my mom is going to love the fact that I interfered in your planetary squabble, because she's going to like that I fought for justice. Here comes the praise. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And Freeman beams down and she's like, change of plans. There's been a huge mistake. We're not going to interfere. She quotes the prime directive and Mariner's like, screw the prime directive. They're eating those guys. What am I supposed to do? Like the voice acting was incredible in the beginning scene.
Yeah.
It's a classic Trek setup too, for like a moral quandary of like, well, when is it appropriate to interfere? When can we bend the prime directive? Uh-huh. And we get none of that. Mm-hmm. We just get the, she's beamed off and can we offer you replicators? Does this solve the issue? Is replicators good enough? Sounds like yes.
Yeah. Look, he's almost like a rat Ferengi.
Oh, yes. Well, and then Mariner told her mom, why are you always being such a bitch? That was like, wow.
Yeah, they had like a pretty, I guess, normal fight for them. But like her mom is like, well, I'm not going to send you the brick this time. You're going to therapy. And that's horrible for somebody like Mariner.
Yes.
And she hates the thought of it because it's probably boring to her, first of all. And also the counselor uses a lot of food metaphors, which is totally true.
Hey, therapy is the place where you go to like essentially, and I'll use the sort of the running metaphor that we've been using for Mariner. Therapy is the place you go to save yourself. And Mariner is interested in saving others. She's not so interested in focusing on herself and giving herself that spotlight. So this is a good episode for that.
Good.
Yeah. It's a thing of vulnerability, right? Like when you go to therapy, you expose like your inner thoughts, your emotions, your feelings, you try and get help, right?
Yes.
And it's vulnerable. And if anything we've learned about Mariner is that she does not like being vulnerable. She likes being the hero. When Ransom stabs her in the foot and she can no longer fight for herself, for example, that is the most pissed off we've seen her in the entire show. So
true.
She definitely doesn't like being out of control and being at somebody's whim, like a therapy session. Mm-hmm. You're out of control of it.
She doesn't want to show any weakness.
No, we see her. Okay. So she gets beamed up unwillingly. Then we hit title sequence. Beautiful as always. The second scene is in the counselor's office on the Cerritos. Uh-huh. And she smashes the bonsai on the table. So yes, she absolutely hates being there.
Rude.
Yeah, very rude. Like, this guy's just doing his job. He sounds like a fun therapist. Like, I wouldn't mind him being my therapist.
That was Mr. Miyagi's bonsai tree she smashed.
What was the therapist's name? Did we learn?
Miglimo.
Write that down.
Yeah.
He's a bird guy. Not a score either.
I think he's an Aurelian, but I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
I don't think, have we seen Aurelians on?
Yeah.
Oh, no. They're in TAS, right?
Yeah, they're in the animated series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He could be an Aurelian, or maybe the score recognize multiple breeds.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Could be a thing.
So okay. I think we did see an Aurelian in On Tolgana 4, like in the Envoys episode, like the second or third episode, but I'd have to go back.
That was a score.
That was a score?
Look,
okay.
They look very similar from what I'm looking at.
Oh, maybe like, they just reused the animation cell for...
Both of them. That would be very TAS.
And then we can actually have a... Yeah, yeah. See, this bird, this little bird doesn't have wings. No. So
maybe he's
a new species. We love it. So he says that she needs an outlet for all of her rage after smashing the bonds, his bonsai, which bonsai are very, like, they take a lot of care. Mm-hmm. If you have a bonsai, you're probably very proud of it. And they're an expensive hobby to get into as well.
I really like the portrait, the scroll behind him to the left there. It's very
Rainbow Rorschach.
Vibey. Yeah, no, definitely Rainbow Rorschach. Good call there. But it just gives me this cool sort of translucent, I don't know.
His whole office was very calming and soothing. It didn't feel like it was on a starship. It felt like it was like an office. Yeah,
It did. I mean, I felt like I was in a therapy session just watching it.
So the candles, that's interesting because O'Connor had candles at his ceremony. And wasn't there something we talked about where people were like, no candles on a starship for some reason?
Yeah, it was
Tuvok had candles too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the significance of one of Worf's rituals was not you had to use an actual candle. It could be like an LED candle or a holographic candle. It had
TNG, an actual flame. I think season 6 or 7, Rightful Heir. Mm-hmm. Couldn't you just use a holographic candle? No, everything had to be real if this was going to be real.
Totally get it. I think the scene just ends with her leaving and she, well, no, it cuts to the holodeck. So the scene, mm-hmm. 3 is a holodeck. The crew, so Mariner, Tendi and Rutherford are shooting clays with actual holographic like shotguns with Da Vinci. And Mariner's like pouting. She's just sitting down. Tendi's like shooting some as they fly in the air. Boimler enters and he doesn't even like wait for them to respond. He says, I would like to use the holodeck so I can practice with my interview with Freeman for an advanced diplomacy workshop, but he doesn't know how he should make her happy in the interview. So he basically took personal logs, 7 years worth from the crew and uploaded them into the program. And then like algorithmically made them act as though they would be a perfect simulation of the rest of the crew. So he can basically say these are avatars of the actual crew. So I can get answers from them that I wouldn't want to basically ask them in reality.
Yeah, this is just another moment
of over preparing. It's just like kind of creepy. It's like Barkley a little bit.
This is one of those moments that has been largely, you know, controversial in Trek is the ability of just anybody to get access to the physical templates and other private things for the holodeck. Mm-hmm. Kira in that one episode of DS9 where someone's trying to get an avatar of Kira. People just discuss this and are like, aren't there any safeguards for this? You know,
it's personal logs.
It comes up in Voyager too. Remember, the Doctor recreates like his hollow novel version of all the crew that he bases off the real crew and all that. Right. And when they actually discover it, they're all kind of pissed about it. Like, this is not okay.
And then so, Leah Brahms.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Leah Brahms example is great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the big, yeah, that's the cringiest one in the biggest one.
This is a little meta, but there was a Black Mirror episode that dealt with the same moral question too. That was really good. That was themed Star Trek as well.
Right. I remember that.
The one that was on the starship?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have it's been a long time since
it's a trippy
that.
Episode.
It's a VR verse that has copied the essence of a real person. Yeah, that's
So there are definitely moral questions about like making clones of your crewmates like in the holodeck just for your own benefit. Mm-hmm. But at least Boimler's like intent for doing so wasn't anything questionable or skeevy.
It wasn't nefarious.
I just want to prep for my test, basically.
It's such a Boimler thing.
It is.
Yes.
It's very in character for him to say, I don't know what the captain wants me to think. So I'm going to make a simulation of the captain so I can ask her questions that I wouldn't want to ask her in person. It's just such like he has this just facade going on of like needing to be perfect. And maybe in Starfleet, you do need to be like, you do need to over prepare. I mean, this is a pretty creative solution, but I do have issue thinking that he was able to access like 7 years of the crew's private logs. Like, that's a lot of
right. That's a little out there. I think it's like, what's the point of a personal log if anyone can just get a hold of it and be able to create a very realistic simulation of you on the holodeck?
Yeah, I would never do that.
I feel like whatever safeguards there are on the holodeck are woefully inadequate across all of Starfleet, right? Like, Moriarty came out of Data asking, I want someone who will be a challenge to me, right? And the computer just makes Moriarty and it goes AI sentient and becomes a problem, right? Like, there need to be better limitations placed upon user power on the holodeck.
Yes.
Period. Yeah.
No, Watney, I want to take it back to that point that you brought up about Boimler being Boimler here, and you're spot on. And if I can expand on that by saying, like, you know, we've talked about it again in our shows that Boimler's biggest problem is not applying what he learns. He just wants to be book learned about everything. So if everything can be book learned, it fits into the little bubble and he never has to apply. And this, you know, this whole episode could have been a simple case of Boimler being like, okay, what would I actually do in these situations instead of how does this person want me to answer?
Yes. It's like an agency question for him. Yeah. And it's almost as though he's afraid to have an effect on the world around him in a meaningful, impactful way, in a way that disrupts and innovates instead of going by the book. Totally, absolutely.
Which makes Mariner and Boimler perfect foils for each other, because doesn't care what people think of her. She's going to do the right thing.
Yeah, it's just back to that for sure. That was like when in the episode where they're stranded on like the Klingon world where they can't contact the Cerritos. I think that was the second episode.
Envoys.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
That was a perfect episode to showcase that. Although they get separated here, kind of go their own paths in this episode, Boimler doesn't take the opportunity to learn about himself as Mariner is through the program. He takes opportunity to go to each person he needs to talk to and instead meets the requirements he thought he needed walking into the holodeck that day. And I get it. I'm sure he's frustrated. He probably worked hard on the program, but he's just going to do what he's going to do.
Right. There's something about how Boimler behaves in this episode that reminds me a lot of like Hoshi early in Enterprise, where she was very much unsteady in space. She didn't like it. She wasn't ready for it. She definitely didn't have her confidence in being in space, right? But she builds it early on in the first season, which was good. It's almost like Boimler has confidence about being in space, but he doesn't have the confidence in dealing with a command structure very well yet. So he doesn't know how to like ask like his immediate lieutenant above him, like, hey, I have to do a presentation to the captain. Any tips? Like, he doesn't have that communications with his own immediate vulnerability. So it's something I'm sure he'll grow and work on.
Yeah. And honestly, like, Mariner's the perfect person to ask about her mom. So like,
but he didn't know.
He doesn't know.
Right.
It's true. Which I didn't realize that wasn't like totally public information.
Yeah, same. I was like, I thought everybody knew that, but I guess
I guess it even plays in more to my augment theory of Mariner, which I don't know if that's going to come to fruition. I really hope it does, because I feel like it's a pretty good theory, but it's like it played into my theory at the end that everything was kind of kept a secret about them and their relationship, and so an augmentation would as well. So anyway, I'm going to take it on back to the scene here. Mariner calls it a brown nosing program, which is exactly what it is. And she decides she's going to go to the Arch on the holodeck and fuck with the code herself, and she's going to enter her own parameters. It's a fun version of therapy. And
Boimler is just like panicking about it
the whole time.
She's doing a really good job. Intruder, when you get to tell the Pelerites, shucks.
She wrote, she was writing his lines. That's hilarious. She's such like a Trek nerd living in the Trek universe.
That's the best thing about her, right? Like the design that she made for the movie that they created was very much in the theme of Star Trek movies. Like it's very
Yes. And that opens up the other a whole range of questions about, are the Star Trek movies canon entirely? What is the difference? Like, what's going on between the shows and the movies, and why are things so different in movies? Yeah, I mean, it's like, and we'll get to this later, but like in engineering, Rutherford makes a comment about like how beaming works in movies, and you're just like, it's totally right. So
maybe, you know, this is totally absurd, but Mariner is so augment that she's become aware that she's a fictional character.
Oh,
you know, if that were the case, then her holographic counterpart in that shows up at the end.
Yeah.
Would have become sentient, I think.
Yeah.
A little bit, which.
But Boimler bases it on personal logs, and I don't think Mariner would have put that in the personal log. So it may have been exempt from the program.
Well, you know, we learned that Mariner learns about herself things that she didn't even realize. So maybe like the algorithm was just so accurate.
Little that of it this, was able to,
it's basically kind of also saying like, hey, AI is like fucking smart.
Speaking of the AI portion of this, right, there's a moment where Boimler asks her like, how did you program all this? You only had like a few seconds at the arch, right? And her response is, oh, I just set up some set pieces and let the computer do the rest, right? Like that answers a lot of questions about other holodeck episodes that we've had in the past, where it's like, how did all that change happen? They were at the screen for like 2 seconds. Like, where was the time? Right. No, they just tell the computer what they want and the computer fills in the gap. The computer is advanced enough, smart enough to like just give the players in the situation the game that they're looking for.
Right.
The computer is a DM.
Exactly. Boimler provided all the raw data. Mariner just rearranged it.
Yep. Told it, here's the plot. Give me this. Here's some set pieces. Here's the best like one-liners, and then go.
Make sure there's lots of holographic blood.
So when they started this, the movie part, that was
the title sequence. They were so excited. Mariner's like, let's go get into costume. I got excited like seeing them get excited. It's kind of like I don't know, it was very like immersive for me, because it's like before a movie starts, I always get really excited if I'm in a theater, and it was kind of like that feeling.
But, right, it's like, are you kidding me? It's like they're in a movie with title sequence and everything. And the
and ducking,
yeah, the freaking letters hit Boimler in the back of the head because it was a physical object.
It's really good that go ahead. Okay, it's really cool that when they do the perspective change, the letters are 3D, but the perspective of the letters changes behind when you see them.
Mm-hmm.
So what I loved about this scene was the fact that they went with the names of the characters, not the names of the actors that voice the characters or anything like that, right? Like it follows through with this is a movie in universe, yes. Right? So it's Devon Attendee is playing it, not the voice actress for Devon Attendee, right?
Right.
Which they do again at the end.
Yes, the cursive, which is beautiful. Yeah, I love that. Winger Bigson Jr., we learn later on there's a like a Lieutenant Winger or something. And so it's funny that they just are so detail oriented in this show. It just gives us so much to talk about. While this is going on, Mariner and Boimler are arguing about first she says like, I made your program into an awesome movie, I'm gonna work some shit out, which, you know, she takes therapy and just makes it insane. Like, she does everything else. She calls Mariner like, or Mariner calls Boimler, you were kind of a Zahn, to be honest. And he's like, who's Zahn?
Callback.
Zahn. And she's like, exactly.
Yep.
Or Zahn.
Zahn was, well, Watney, do you have it to answer Renzo's question? I can tell you who Zahn is.
No, I was waiting for you guys to chime in because I just read my outline.
So, back in the late 70s, Star Trek Phase 2, there were sets being built, some actors cast, original actors were coming back. It was going to be another Star Trek series. And they couldn't get Leonard Nimoy to come back. So they still wanted a Vulcan. They had a Vulcan character. His name was Zahn. And I forget the actor's name that played him. He ended up being in the motion picture. He was the guy on the base that was giving the updates on what was happening with the Klingons and the thing. So that was that was Zahn. It was going to be the replacement for Spock in the TV series Star Trek Phase 2, but they changed gears because Star Wars came out, kicked everyone's ass, and they decided we're turning this into a movie instead of another TV series. So that's who Zahn was going to be.
The only thing that's left from Zahn in actual canon, though, is the Commander Sonak character from the motion picture. He was the Vulcan who was going to fill in Spock's role while Spock was gone. He was the only other Vulcan available,
yes,
or however it was phrased. And yep, he's the one who dies in that horrible, horrible transporter accident.
The motion picture, the science officer.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, and that's so he was the actual, there's two people in that transporter accident, and he was named. But in the novels, and Renzo would probably know this as well, but in the novels, the other person in the transporter accident with him was, I think, Kirk's ex-wife.
Yes, that was in the novel. Yep.
Yeah, and he makes a comment in the book or something about alimony as she's like, after she horribly dies, like right in front of him or something.
I remember.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's not the comedy we wanted.
It's absolutely not. And
I guess like, I stopped paying alimony now.
That transporter accident, like it just takes my breath away. It's so terrifying.
Yeah.
And it happens at the at the beginning of the motion picture, or like in the mid first act. So you're like, holy shit, space is terrifying. It's just a matter of surviving until it gets you. Like that's basically what space is.
So let's call this example one of transporters don't work the way that you think they do in the movies. In the movies, they're more apt to fail, it seems.
Oh God. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It was definitely his ex-wife, Lori Siana, I think was her name. And she was like a vice admiral or something who had been in the diplomatic corps and was a big pain in Kirk's neck. Like they did not get along after the divorce at all. So.
Well, that's it.
Why don't you let me take over, Yeoman?
And why I know this is a Star Trek the motion picture question, we don't have to get into it now, but why is Rand still a yeoman after all this?
I don't think she was a yeoman. I was just being dumb because she was a yeoman forever.
I think you're right though. I think
she was transport chief.
She's a yeoman right up until her appearance in Star Trek 3 or 4.
Interesting.
Up until 3 and 3 she was a commander at least. I didn't recall her being a yeoman still in
motion
picture. From
yeoman to commander.
Let's swing this back to Lower Decks.
Yeah, why don't we do that? We could do this literally all day. So at the time when they go to put their costumes on, Boimler drops into the simulation, the holodeck program, into a lake. And the senior staff rolls up on jet skis. And Ransom's like, I don't remember giving you permission to scoot with us, Ensign.
Which is another big reference to the movies, right? Like a lot of Star Trek movies start with the crew on vacation or on their birthday or out just hanging out or doing activities, like a physical activity is like the thing that starts a lot of movies. Yeah. Even the interesting in Nemesis where they go find B4's body, they're on the buggies and such. That's very similar to this kind of thing too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you get to see the characters having fun and playing grab ass like you normally wouldn't in the show, which is exactly what is going on with like Shax and everybody. So
somehow Boimler gets his own scooter.
Yeah, I don't know. The holodeck was like, oh, you're here. you're supposed to go change, but you know. Whatever. It just shows he's like, he doesn't go with the rest of them to go have fun. He stays where he's at and then gets like hangs out with the senior staff, which is what he really wanted to do in the first place.
I like that the jet skis also have little iPad trays.
Oh yes. Yeah,
pad. Great job.
That was a nice touch for those jet skis.
Yeah. So the Freeman gets a call to come back to the Cerritos. There's a request for their presence at Douglas Station, a beautiful starbase that looks like every other starbase.
So I want to point something out about this.
Please do.
This is a reuse of the scene from Envoys.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And it's like so funny because there's like this one matte painting that gets used in TNG over and over for like the different planets.
Yes.
It's like, I think it's a play on that a little bit because you get the, like, you know, where the TNG crew goes down to the matriarchal planet. That's one of them. And then in Deep Space Nine, they use the same painting for the planet where Curzon is covering up a murder because his like ex-lover,
right,
her husband, like it's the same it's the same painting used for different planets. They just change like the mountains a little bit. So I think that this is like totally in reference to that.
Definitely a reuse. And
yeah. Yeah, no. And it's, I love star bases. So, it is very fitting. Everything is fitting in the show. They're talking to, the Starbase Admiral and he says that, they got a call from Idlikana 6, a bizarre message saying, thank you for an excellent second contact with the San Clemente. Well, what's wrong with this situation? Starfleet doesn't have a San Clemente. Boimler's like, ooh, the plot thickens. And he's like, by the way, if this were real, they'd totally send the Enterprise.
That was great.
And this was the same admiral that we saw before, right? The one that mispronounced things a lot.
Oh, Mike.
Yep, that's him.
It is. It's the same Sensor. Guy. I didn't even realize. Sensor.
Sensor guy.
And it makes you wonder if he mispronounced Idlikana and the subtitles just went ran with it.
Oh, my God.
Could be.
Probably. Freeman's like, well, this is a fantastic mission. The Cerritos just got some upgrades. It'll be good to try it out. And then we got the gratuitous shots of the Cerritos in a motion picture callback to the longest intro of the ship of the Enterprise ever seen. Mm-hmm. Billups is like, he's both acting like weirdly sexy and he also cries. Like, I don't get it. Like, he's just like so excited. He's like, everyone, it's just such like a movie vibe in this shuttle.
It is the flybys, the passbys, movie vibe.
Look at him looking.
It's such a well shot scene too. Like, it really reminds you of when they're going towards the Enterprise A in the at the end of the fourth or beginning of the fifth.
End of the fourth.
It reminds you of when they're going towards it and they think they're hitting the Excelsior in the third. It reminds you of so many different little scenes because it's just a reuse of that, like boarding the ship. And they also do it in Broken Bow in the first Enterprise movie. They do it in All Good Things when Tasha Yar pilots Picard to the Enterprise D, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they've reused that idea a few times. So it's good that they did it here too.
Yeah. And then also while they're doing that, they have like that overture from Star Trek 3 in the background, blending right into the Lower Decks main theme.
And the lens flare.
Lens flares. I noticed that too.
I think it's paying homage to the JJ universe, the Kelvin universe. Also making fun of it a little bit.
And then we're also just getting these like overly gratuitous, like every single angle possible.
Billups is crying.
It's obnoxious. It's obnoxious.
Oh God.
Oh, look at that. How much time did you spend on that part?
About 30 seconds.
For those other big thing is it's whole cast shots too, right? Whole cast shots aren't super common on most shows,
right?
But in the movies, you always had every member on the bridge, right? Same thing here. They had all of them on the shuttle.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Great point. Right. Amazing point. Yes, you're totally right. It's just I expected to see it. So I didn't like pocket it as like different, but this is totally a love letter to the movies.
And I want to let our listeners know that if you're having trouble understanding what we're talking about, we're looking at a deck of images. Mm-hmm. It's going to be posted to YouTube. So you can watch the same episode with all the image references. And we'll do our best to explain what we're looking at for the audio segment.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So we go to the bridge as it's leaving.
Zooms.
Yeah. That is a gorgeous image.
Cerritos exiting the starbase in the
silhouette. Depth of it with the light from the sun coming up underneath. It's beautiful.
And the gratuitous lens flare.
Of course. And we go to the bridge and Freeman, Ransom's like, the ship is ready for your command, Captain. And Freeman's like, warp me. So we finally here.
All the lens flares, super shiny.
Oh, it's so pretty.
Boimler was even squinting at one point, if I remember correctly, too. Like, he's got like a moment where it's like, this is annoying. Kind of look.
Well, and also look how glistening Freeman is here, which is like, warp me. She's just like reflecting. And then this exaggerated sequence.
Yeah.
The warp effect was, that was
with the lightning.
So that's definitely a Kelvin hit back, because when it goes to warp, it leaves the contrails.
Yes.
That you don't get from the previous stall.
On the other hand, the arrival when it gets to Italicana 6 is very much discovery. It's that very much dead stop at the end of warp.
Right.
So they're picking from each one and they're mixing and matching, but it looks great.
Yeah, that's... And please don't let me get off track on this, but there's something about that dead stop that Discovery started showing, that Star Trek Picard picked up on, that this one did. I guess I was used to seeing in TNG, the Enterprise would come out of warp, but it would slow down. You would hear the warp core kind of powering down. It would be coming in. It wouldn't just stop on a dime. Mm-hmm. And I know that the ship itself is not physically moving. It's in that's warp bubble in subspace. So yeah, maybe the sudden stop is more realistic than the slowing down. I don't know.
Well, faster than light travel, first of all, has many different depictions across all media.
Sure.
But I do tend to think that if you are poking a hole in space and moving through that, mm-hmm, you're not even moving through it at warp in Star Trek. You're right. Space is bending around you. So I think it's more realistic if it just stops, but I understand how that would have looked very weird in TNG. And it doesn't make sense to the audience, like, I think in that point in time.
I've got the compromise for you. It's a setting, right? Like, they can control exactly how they come out of their warp, right? They can choose for it to be at very precise, this is the exact position where we will stop it, and we stop when we come out of warp. Or it's like a glide back in sort of setting, right? Where it slows down and essentially approaches the planet at speed, right?
Right.
Like, I'm sure that's a choice that their helm officer can make.
Okay.
Yeah. That makes sense. Off screen, yeah, just like when we're going to come out of warp, we'll come out of warp with thrusters.
Yeah, headcanon. Okay. Yeah, and it just depends on the cool factor you're going for.
Yep.
So,
I like what you think Boimler,
cool, what you think being cool is.
I like when they come out of warp here and Boimler's like, the selenium is interfering with our sensors, because that's what selenium does in Star Trek. It's an Enterprise episode where they can't scan the planet because of selenium isotopes.
Oh my god, these guys are fucking nerds and I love them. I just want to hang out with these writers.
I know. Can you imagine hanging out for like just a day with the writers on this show?
Anyone know what ship this is?
This is an exaggerated D7 battlecruiser, right, probably specifically for Mariner, but you can see the underbelly. It has the wings of a bird of prey,
mm-hmm,
but it is definitely got the Klingon influence, especially in that prow. You can very clearly see that. Mm-hmm. I think, though, that Mariner just exaggerated it to be Vindicta's.
It is. Oh, yeah. And the whole idea of Mariner's alter ego here, Vindicta, and it's very con to me, because it's like, I'm chasing this captain that I'm obsessed with,
yes,
and want to kill. Yes. So, very, very prevalent trope.
It's very Klingon, though. That bridge, yes, is very much the Klingon Bird of Prey classic bridge, the two, yep, pillars on the sides thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm with you, though. It's a new ship. It's not something we've seen before, but it is pretty close to a couple things out of Star Trek Online, the Moog class, the Kulak class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have that
but
ship.
But it's cool.
It's not foggy enough, honestly, but I'll
there's no Targ
it
farting on the ground.
Oh, Jesus. Who
it is.
There is a Targ mention in this episode, which we'll get to. So Vindicta comes aboard. Yes, Vindicta introduces herself as the arch nemesis of Freeman. She's going to bathe, mm-hmm, in her blood. This is henchman Tendi, Savage Warrior Queen, who comes from a long line of thieving Orion pirates. And Tendi's like, yeah, I'll steal from anyone and never give it back. Theft. Because she's so out of place. She's just going with it because she's like hanging with her friends.
She has a good arc here, though. It's really cool.
Yeah, she does. And then we have Sam is Bionic 5, half man meat, half robot meat. Robot meat, all pain, 100% pain. And then we, of course, are introduced to Shempo, who is supposed to be where Boimler is. But of course, he's on the bridge. He is on the captain's side.
Right.
And Shempo's like, I love my captain and I don't want to be doing this. So he's kind of like the recreation. It's funny how like Shempo looks like nothing like, he looks like him kind of just with the purple hair. But other than that, he really doesn't look like him. It's like the algorithm didn't really know what to do for him.
Shempo is a rip on what's that old 30s comedy with the three bungling idiots that
Three Stooges. Remember.
Yes, yeah. Shempo was a replacement Stooge when yep. Curly left, and his hair looks like that.
Well, and his name was Shemp. Yeah,
Shemp. Right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Shemp was one of the Howard brothers.
You
would have gotten that.
Mo and Curly and Shemp, they were all brothers.
Yes. It's very interesting that the algorithm that's in this program didn't know what to do with Boimler, since we know he does like 5 logs a day.
Maybe.
So there's enough data. But maybe it's not like depth of data, you know, about him himself. Maybe it's about what's around him.
Well, Boimler programmed it to be himself on the ship. So there shouldn't be another Boimler, which is why this Jumbo guy is a throwaway character.
You're 100% right. You're 100% right. We'll go with that. She ends up like Freeman's like, there's no need for theatrics. Mariner shoots Shempo and phasers him, kill phaser, like disintegrates him. Then Mariner goes into like a monologue and she says, we learned that Ransom is very well read. And Mariner's like, hell is empty and all the devils are here. And we learn that she starts looping the recording to distract them.
You know, in a very Chang-esque move, or in a very Khan-esque move, because it's that big villain monologue. Even Shinzon does it at certain points, where he's just monologuing.
Oh my god, Shinzon was... yes.
God, Shinzon.
Or Captain Krug did it too, right? Like, he was also trying to talk Kirk into just giving up
real money.
Picard is the... Picard is the king of monologuing, too. Yeah. It's just like a very common Trek thing. Be inspirational and philosophical. It's all what Trek's all about.
Yep. And then we see a fantastic boarding pod.
Oh, this is great. Crashing through. Like, yeah. I'm just going to come over. No knocking. This is where we see the build at the beginning title sequence for the episode in the movie in the episode. Mm-hmm. We see Winger meets Lieutenant Lamans. They have like a short exchange and then they get crushed by that pod. The door
Did you
opens?
Notice that yeah, after they get crushed, they vanish in like holographic, you know, your time on this program is
like
over.
Like a video game.
Yeah.
Just going to respawn. That.
That's cool.
Interesting. The Mariner exits with this really cool gun that like fires and sequences.
Such a cool weapon.
Yeah. And Tendi's like, yeah. And Sam's like, yeah. They're just there to support her. And Chief Lundy calls Mariner a witch and then attacks her, and she ends up killing him, and they're like, wow, did you see that? His accent was just perfect. I thought that was funny. Mariner's cape gets caught. Common, no capes. No capes in movies.
No capes.
That was the only like graphical continuity short sight, I think. She has these pauldrons on that are very Klingon at the very beginning. She takes the cloak off and she still has the pauldrons on. The very next scene where we see her, pauldrons are gone. So she Ooh. Must have shed them at some point, but they don't show it at all either. Mm-hmm. Small thing, but they pauldrons didn't show are cool. her well.
Yeah. She moved out of the frame of reference that the game had installed on the pauldrons and the cape together. So when she left the cape, the pauldrons just disappeared.
Ah, that makes sense.
But are costumes holographic?
Yes. Well, yes,
theirs are.
They can be.
They're not, because remember when Tendi steps outside, the blood comes off of her, but the costume stays on her.
Yeah, in DS9, when Dax meets Worf for the first time, they're in this like these Renaissance outfit. So maybe it's like, it's again, your choice.
Yeah. Yes.
It would be very awkward if the program crashed and you all stand around naked.
So. You can be authentic and walk in wearing the actual outfit, or the holodeck can replace your outfit with a holographic outfit.
It replicates it on the spot and just applies it to you.
Yeah. And if you drop a part of it and move out of a range of it, the computer reclaims it.
Mm-hmm.
That works.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
thanks for the
We're just a bunch of nerds, you guys. Thanks for listening to us. We're just get so into this. So Mariner throws Chief Lundy in the wall. Sam has a very cool pauldron to kind of go with his cyborg like theme.
He's talking to Tendi. It's so great what he's
They're
saying.
So cute. They're cute.
And they have just generic phasers compared to Mariner's like badass gun thing.
Yeah. Yeah, the hallway Mariner is like waiting for, I guess, the rest of the crew to come fight them. And turns out they do. And she keeps mentioning that Tendi is like an Orion who takes slaves. And Tendi is like super uncomfortable with it. And Lundy tries to, or someone tries to attack her, and Mariner like defends her. And you can just tell this is not like Tendi's preferred holodeck program with her spare time.
She's very much out of her element.
She probably like wants to like paint a landscape in the holodeck. Mm-hmm. Like that's like,
with she was shooting clay pigeons with Da Vinci. So she can get down a little. Just
well, we know she can
crew.
Get down because she martial arted.
Oh, that's true.
All of those Romulans.
Right.
As she was the cleaner.
Episode. Yeah. I just think she's like, I don't want to be perceived as a stereotype. So, which is totally, totally fair. And Mariner kind of tries to play up the in-universe assumptions here because it's a movie and Tendi doesn't like that. So Ransom and his crew come into the picture and he's like, I fought overpowered warlords before, and we're gonna do attack pattern raptor, which is such a movie attack pattern.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you can talk the talk, but can you walk the walk? And then she shoots him. Boimler like runs over to Ransom to console him. And she's like, oh, she can talk. She's talking and walking. Same time.
Great one line.
Yeah. And Boimler asks Ransom what kind of cookies Captain Freeman likes for his interview as he's dying. And he's like, cookies are a good move. I've done it myself. Careful, she's allergic to and then Mariner shoots him, as is a very movie thing to do.
Right when you want to get that great information.
No!
It's a very like a Kirk-esque like no when he's screaming too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we go down to engineering with Sam, or I'm sorry, Bionic 5. he's double fisting some phasers here and he goes into engineering because he realizes he can talk to his boss and tell him stuff without it actually being his boss. So he gets excited. He's going to go tell his boss how amazing he is. Phillips clears engineering and like stands by the door like, no, you're not going to get past me. And then Sam is basically like, I just want to tell you how amazing you are. And I think the way you program subroutines is beautiful. And he's like, wow, thanks. That's really weird. And then they like start to save the ship together and they bond. And he's like, you know, for a crazy like criminal, you know a lot about starships. Mm-hmm. So what do you guys think of this scene?
I thought that I don't know. I wasn't sure what to think of it. It was a great way for Rutherford to show his real admiration for the chief engineer and just his love of engineering. This guy, if you didn't think that Rutherford was deep into the engineering part of the job and had a real passion for it before, you definitely know now.
Yeah, I thought that it would have been really out of character for Rutherford to storm in here and be, you know, warlordy after what had happened in that episode where he is like switching uniforms so much. And Phillips was so supportive. Like, hey, you know what? Yeah. Go out there. Anybody's going to be good to get you. And it's just like, you know, you don't do the workplace rampage when your boss is that cool.
Yeah.
Much like what Freeman's, what Mariner's doing here. Sam took the opportunity to, you know, tell a hologram how much he adored him.
it's really, it's almost like you need to say what you want to say while you have time to say that to a person in reality, because we learn later that Phillips is maybe not completely like, he might be struggling internally. So
yeah, that scene with Phillips was definitely interesting at the end.
Yeah. It was like, I want to learn more.
You know, I didn't even think about that. That's such a good idea, Watney.
So yeah. I've got two things out of this scene that I wanted to mention. First, I think it was a missed opportunity to have that awesome Geordi rolling out of the door as it's shutting. I think that would have been really cool for Billups.
Missed opportunity. Damn. Right? Yes. But
amazing. Second, there are a couple of marijuana references in this scene that I was like, I didn't see those coming at all. So when they're talking about what they can do to set up like a rudimentary plasma filter or whatever, they talk about indica controls and sativans, right? Indica and sativa are like the two big marijuana strains that everybody uses.
Very nice.
Right? And I heard them and I was like, did that say? I had to rewatch the scene a couple times to make sure I typed out the names in a way that made sense. But yeah, that's what they were referencing.
Good catch.
Why would they do that?
I'm totally rewatching this with subtitles.
Yeah, I watched it with subtitles. I didn't even catch that. That's fucking great.
I'm not sure as to the why. Maybe it might be like a, ooh, we're in the movie so we can be edgier kind of thing. But I don't know.
It may be some kind of internal reference to people taking everyday words and tweaking them a little bit and applying them to technobabble.
Yeah, technobabble being nonsense. That's an easy. That makes sense. Yeah.
Maybe it means they had to be high to write this episode.
Could be. I don't know. The writer's room could be a little baked.
Yeah. So they bond a little bit, and then we go back. We go to the lounge. There's a huge fucking gun that Shax is wielding, and he's like, "When you get to hell, tell the pod race that Shax said ya." And then he's fire. It's a cool gun.
Just like it was scripted at the beginning.
So one of my favorite fucking things in this episode is Mariner using a Borg head as a shield. It's so badass. Look how fucking badass that is. That's amazing.
We're looking at the super cool flashy of Shax's phaser cannon reflecting off of the energy shield of this Borg head Mariner just somehow happened to have on her the whole time.
Right.
Well, it's a movie. I don't know.
Where does Shax get the freaking cannon, the phaser cannon? That thing's ridiculous.
Did you guys get the reference for that thing coming from Into Darkness?
Yes.
It looks a lot like the one that Khan had, they called it the Boolean gun. It looks just like it, too. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And
I jumped over to Voltron because the character has a giant cannon like that, but it's not the same thing.
The effect from it is very similar, though. You're right that like the way that the beams kind of like hit something and like there's little like sparks that spread out is very much like the Voltron show.
It's beautiful. The scene is beautiful. I love it. She throws the Borg head at Shax, designation explosive, and explodes, killing him. The Shax's ear, it gets like Shax, holographic Shax explodes completely. His earring gets flown across the room. Mariner picks it up
off of Tendi's head.
Oh God. Yes. Dangles it around and she's like, why don't you put it on? She's like, I don't know. This is weird. Blood is everywhere. She's uncomfortable with everything that's going on. And Mariner calls him. She's like, you're an Orion slave. You should steal this or whatever. And she's like, I'll have you know, most Orions haven't been slaves for 5 years now. and she just basically like, she wants to go. She doesn't like where it's going. And Mariner's like, well, we're going to go basically torture the captain. So you better buckle up. This is us feeling good.
This is not Tendi's thing.
No, this is not Tendi's bag.
She's never done anything like this.
She's just a friend who like wants to support, but she doesn't want to be involved. So
it's easier probably for her to like beat the snot out of a bunch of Romulans she doesn't know than to go on a rampage on a ship of people that she does know. Knowing her bedside manner when she helped that one dude that was like, he said I was gonna die. She's like, no, you're gonna be fine. Like, she just like wants to love and care for people. And yeah, so
yeah, she's a cinnamon roll, you know. And so she leaves, and the blood leaves her as she exits the hologram.
Yeah, which was really cool.
It was pretty cool. And Mariner yells in frustration and the lights flicker. It's pretty cool.
Well, not only did the blood leave her, but the outside, the hologram returned to the non-cinema aspect ratio.
Right. Look at this picture. Inside the holodeck, it's letterbox. And outside the holodeck, it's not. Oh, my God.
That's fucking funny. I didn't catch it. That's amazing.
Letterbox.
So good. I don't know if you noticed this, but the whole time you've been in the holodeck, we've had the black bars.
No. For sure. Yeah, I've noticed that.
And I'm sure I don't know if we pointed it out already, but the film grain in the holodeck.
Mm-hmm. There was film grain.
And then just this moment right here, talk about your attention to detail. So
that's
clever.
Incredible. Yeah.
So clever. You can't even see like Mariner's legs.
Right, because it's It's you're watching the movie. She's in the movie.
This is like a fifth wall break.
Right. I love it.
The fifth wall.
Yeah.
It's so
damn good. Breaking dimensions. Yeah. We cut to the bridge after Mariner yells. Freeman is like, what is everyone doing? Come in. Like, no one's reporting in. The lighting's amazing. Mariner enters the bridge and says, no, it's just you and me and those guys. And she shoots whoever's left on the bridge with her. And then now she's alone with her mom. And she's like, what do you want? Why do you want to take my ship? She's like, I don't want your ship. I want you to stop treating me like the bad guy all the time. Why don't you ever side with me? And Freeman's like, I don't know who you are. And she's like, I'm your daughter or something. And then Freeman's like, you're crazy. And she's like, am I? And then she blows up her own ship.
Yeah. This is
her own warp core.
This is a weird moment for Mariner to not get fully immersed in the role of Vindicta and actually be like in the role of daughter to mother when Freeman is obviously in the role of the captain who's got to fight Vindicta.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Mariner was just like so angry that she was like, this is the catharsis. I'm going to be so mad. But the fact that the captain can't play along is probably frustrating her even more.
Yeah, I think she just needed to say some stuff to her mom without it being her mom. Mm-hmm. But the real thing is her fighting herself later. I think that's, I don't know. Yeah, she's nuts.
She's lost it by this scene for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so once she explodes her own ship, we get the beautiful ship destruction sequence that almost like Trek movies just love to have, where the Cerritos falls towards what's the planet name? Idlokana 6.
Yes.
And in a fiery flame, the saucer gets removed and rolls down a mountainside
right behind Hotshark.
That's it right there.
This is the ultimate game of disc golf.
It's like the scene it's like the scene from I think it's Nemesis, where isn't it Nemesis?
Generations. Enterprise D, when the saucer section was
it flies and it lands like flat, but this is like we're just gonna do it the other way.
Well, there's a lot of deciduous looking planet.
Saucers colliding. Go ahead.
So there's an Into Darkness. You've got the Vengeance when it scrapes across half of San Francisco, which was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
You've got the one in Beyond where you see the entire saucer from that Enterprise just crash down and come to a skid at an angle too. Mm-hmm. They do it in Generations with the Enterprise D. Half of it gets split and blown off. In Star Trek III, you've got the original Enterprise again getting blown up in space, and you see it like streak through the atmosphere, which is pretty traumatic as well. So yeah, there's definitely
a history of...
Yeah, they've blown up many Enterprise.
They played a couple tropes here in that scene with the...
And even in First Contact, like, they make fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Crusher's like, we'll just build another one.
Right, plenty more letters in the alphabet.
What were you saying, Big J?
I was just saying that there were a couple movie tropes that they put into the scene. From Star Trek III, the kind of, burning coming into the atmosphere. Well, three and with Generations, there was a brief scene where you see the saucer section hitting the upper atmosphere and, the fire there. And the crashing. So
there's a Voyager episode, too, where Voyager gets shot through a quantum slipstream and crashes on a planet, too. So there's a couple places in the show where they've done it, too. But it's definitely much more prominent than the movies.
Yes.
We just have to do it everywhere. We need every ship to have one of these moments.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hologram, so thank God.
I'd like to point out this is one of the few holodeck centric episodes where the holodeck isn't malfunctioning.
True.
Oh.
Yeah, the holodeck's like, it's my time to shine. Just give me some rain.
It would have been really funny if, this would be the best part for Badgie to show up and be like,
Oh my God. Yeah. You're right. Where's Badgie? He's just eating popcorn.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the saucer rolls and gets stuck on like a mountainside. Freeman's trapped on the bridge. There's an old red alert sound, the klaxon happening from TOS. And she says all surviving crew, emergency evacuation protocol echo. And she's not a bad captain. Like Freeman is not a bad captain. She's just mom to Mariner. She's not right. Captain Mariner. She's mom, and she's overbearing mom at that. So we cut to Mariner comes in, I think, and says, like, I don't know what she says here. She's like,
What do you do now?
You crash your ship, blah, 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 blah. She's like, I'm a good captain. I'm compassionate. We cut to Billups and Sam in engineering. And Sam ended up beaming out the entire crew during like a repeating transporter program or something. And Billups is like, what? You can't do that. That's not possible. And Sam's like, you can do whatever you want. It's a movie. You can beam all sorts of things. Very yes. accurate. Yeah. So they end up like having a bonding moment. It's pretty great.
I don't know if anybody's noticing, but the symmetry of Sam's tattoo keeps changing between frames. Is if you can notice here on this screen where he is embracing Billups kind of and explaining it to him, the tattoo on his shoulder has a little heart eye, and that and it flips between scenes.
Oh, that's weird. I wonder if that's a continuity thing.
Obviously, in my opinion, intentional continuity error. It's a reference to all the times that happens.
Continuity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's great.
That's cool.
Yeah. So we cut back to the bridge, and Mariner chases her mom up like a panel, and they fight a little bit, and she's like, you've been a jerk since I was 8 years old, which obviously like that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, like I get that Mariner isn't perfect, but her mom is overbearing. Absolutely. And if you are like that with your child, at a very young age, like you're gonna end up fighting with them. So, and it's just a lot. Brings back some memories.
In a holographic recreation of a movie.
Yes.
Sound like a good form of therapy to me, though.
It does.
Actually, be able to get some stuff off your chest.
Yeah.
100% agree. Totally love it. There was a neat suggestion that like Mariner, like, and Wadi, you said earlier too, is that to Mariner, Freeman's always just been mom. And so Mariner's, you know, disregard here is forgetting that Carol has more responsibility than just being mom. And sometimes that's to Mariner's deficit.
It is. And I think in relation to responsibility, like you can be responsible towards whatever you need to, but you can also not be an asshole.
Right.
And I think that Freeman has been like that to Mariner, questioning everything she does for a long time, and that she just snapped in this episode.
And we can see that builds too, right? Like even when they were fighting the like terramorphic goo or whatever that was transforming the ship, they're like, use that handhold. No, use that handhold. Oh no, climb this way. It's like that sort of thing, no matter how much you love your parent, is going to become frustrating at some point.
Stop micromanaging me, mom. I know what I'm doing. It's a very Finding Nemo kind of thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, with dad and Nemo.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, maybe we'll see Mariner go off on her own or something.
Are we in the rickety bridge yet?
We're about to be there. Okay. And very rickety, as is in movies, we need to fight on a... I forget what she says. We need to fight on like...
Catwalk.
Oh, yeah.
Mariner's holographic. Because the real Mariner is Vindicta, which I didn't realize. I did not get it when I first watched it, but the real Mariner is Vindicta.
Yep.
And Mariner's program Mariner comes out and she's like, get away from my mom, bitch, which is kind of like Ripley from Alien a little, which is cool. She emergency transports her mom off, which is very Nemesis, and instead fights
Vindicta herself.
I'll just call her Vindicta. and Mariner respectively. So they fight, and Vindicta's like, I know all your moves. I know everything about you. So you're not going to win here. And she's like, I know that you dressed up as Toby the Tar for Halloween every year, even when you were too old. Toby the Targ is a reference to, I think it's like a kid show for in the Trek verse. And like, I think B'Elanna had like a stuffed Toby the Targ, which a Targ is like basically a warthog with fur.
Yes.
For those of you who haven't seen, like there's a early on in TNG, there was an episode where there's like the traveler that's with them, and Worf has a Targ that just appears on the bridge, like right by him. So it's just an ongoing reference to one of the
that was his pet animals. His pet yeah. from home. Like that the Targ is the Klingon version of dogs for yeah. us.
Yes.
Fun little behind the scenes thing. The Targ actor, or the actor animal that was on the bridge in TNG when they shot that scene, actually urinated on the carpet, and the smell of it was so bad it was still smellable like 2 years later.
Oh.
So it was one of those like they couldn't get it out of the rug kind of thing until they had actually replaced it. It's part of why when they replaced the bridge after season two to season three, the color on the rug changed.
Oh
my God, that's such a good nugget. I wow, love that. Wow,
that's trivia I did not know. Thank you.
So yeah, Toby the Targ. Even when she was too old, Mariner dressed up as her for Halloween. She actually loves the warp core. She says, if you were a good person, you do the hard thing and actually be a good officer. Everyone expects you to break rules. Why don't you just do the thing no one expects of you? She throws her down off a ledge, which is very movie. We go back to the planet where the Cerritos has crashed, and Billups is like, something like, you're the best, like you're one of the best engineers in my book or something. And Sam's like, that's a book I'd read cover to cover. they hug. It's pretty cute that they hug, because we rarely get to see like two men showing affection in this way.
Right.
And we've talked about this a lot during the Picard season reviews. Very, very cute. Love to see it. And Billups is even like, we should just get our own ship and go. We should like, you know, repair the ship like all just on our own and be the best engineers together. And I think this like representation of Billups plays into what we see of him later in reality being very sad. Like maybe he's actually not happy in his job. And he's expressing that in the holo program to Sam.
Well, I just want to point out, I missed that whole subplot, and I'm so grateful that you pointed it out, because like, I saw the thing at the end with Billups and the soup, and he's just sort of stirring his stoop. And I was like, this is weird. But then you're pointing these things out, and like, man, something's up with Billups. And now I'm scared. What's going to happen in the finale?
Well, Billups better stick around, because I really like him. And I think he was very encouraging for Sam to find something he loves to do, because I think maybe he sees in himself a little bit of Sam, and wanting to give him the best shot. And maybe he's not entirely happy on the Cerritos, even though he loved the ship and cried when he saw it. Like, you can still love what you're doing, but maybe not be fulfilled. And I think that might be what's going on.
Yeah.
So Boimler approaches Freeman with a tray of cookies and says, here's some chocolate chip cookies. And Jet, ironically, based on Cupid's Air and Arrow, we know Jet and Jet's Boimler back. Do not get along. Jet's back. He tackles Boimler. Boimler wants to know where the captain sees him in 5 years, where she wants him to see himself in 5 years. Mm-hmm. And we learn that Jet's the man. Captain just ignores Boimler. So.
And this is, again, Boimler thinking too hard about things instead of just being like, man, where do I see myself in 5 years? He's looking for the right answer instead of doing the right thing.
Right, exactly.
Wants the right answer.
We go back to the bridge, and Mariner and Vindicta have been fighting. Mariner says, you don't really know me at all. I like the ship. I like working with my best friends, and I'd do anything for the captain. Why do you think I stuck around fighting you to buy them time to get off the ship so I could run the self-destruct program? She's like,
if you notice that they were fighting like on the view screen, and then it's cracking while they're fighting.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
Jurassic Park 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
This totally fulfills that thing that we have been talking about for Mariner's role, is she wants to be the one who kills the victim and goes out with a bang.
Mm-hmm.
It's it's just, it's great that it's virtual, but it's just, it's so cool to get that. We've been talking about it all season, and now here it is. Hollow Mariner does the thing we said Mariner would do.
Yes, for sure. The therapy apparently works.
Yeah, I guess the other thing is, like, Mariner as Vindicta just was so into, like, being vindictive that she got owned by her mom and her hollow self. Like, her mom tied her up in those cables and her other self outsmarted her.
Yeah.
This is a Mariner who we have seen be cool and collected, and she's losing her crap here.
Oh yeah.
It's very much like Azula vulnerable. At the end, right? The Azula at the end of Avatar the Last Airbender, when she's kind of unraveling. She's still strong and powerful, but she's not collected and controlled. So yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah. So the self-destruct blows the ship up, and Wimler gets thrown off of a cliff.
Freaking Jet, why would you do that?
I don't know. Jet has his own shit going on algorithmically.
That seems like the most unnecessary thing to do. Just throw him off a cliff.
Very movie. The gang is back in the holodeck as a blank program, and Mariner's like, yep, therapy definitely works. And Boibler's so scarred. He doesn't know what he's gonna do. So we cut to the lounge. Beautiful, beautiful scene, beautiful shot here. Oh my god, it's just gorgeous. And Mariner's talking to Sam, and she's like, well, why don't you just tell Billups how you really feel? It sounds like you got a lot out of it. Like, I sure did. I had a great time. It was way better than therapy. And Sam's like, well, look at him. I don't need to tell him how he feels. He's total stone cold badass. Even though he's just eating soup and looking
really sad. Worried there. Look at those eyebrows.
Yeah.
Very sad.
You're so right. I'm so sad now, because, like, you're like, this is where you, like, have the opportunity to tell your loved ones that you love them before it's too late. And here's Billups looking worried. Did he get some kind of medical diagnosis? Did someone back home die? Is he getting transferred off the Cerritos?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he just longs for a different kind of adventure. I don't know. He's definitely smart. Brilliant. Mariner apologizes to Tendi for the whole Orion thing, and Tendi's like, oh, it's okay. They're kind of capitalist, hyper-libertarian gangster pirates, so that's just not me. I'm not one of those. I'm different. And she's like, do you want to go sit and look at the warp core with me? And then they're like, yeah, let's go do that. Fuck yeah. Because Mariner apparently loves looking at the warp core, as we learned. The gang goes down the hall. Freeman sees her daughter having fun. Approaches her, and Mariner's like, look, I'm sorry about the whole thing on that planet. And they bump fists. Freeman's like, this is weird.
Yep.
So she goes to the counselor and tries to get the counselor to break client patient privilege.
The bonsai tree is still broken.
Patient counselor, yeah. And he's like, I'm not gonna do that. You're acting like a pineapple or something.
Right. You're acting like a pineapple.
Yeah. And Freeman turns the table over just like her daughter.
Yeah.
It's also a meme, though, right? Like, flipping a table's a meme, right?
Oh,
and I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
What is a pineapple to a bird?
It's prickly.
It's prickly.
Yep. Well, it's prickly to everyone, not just birds. I think they're prickly.
Well, and I'm just thinking, sharp. Like, I mean, birds eating stuff. The way that this bird's beak is fashioned is more like seeds than pineapples to me, but...
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So then we start to close out the episode with the ending. Boimler goes back to the holodeck where there's a funeral going for Mariner, who still sacrificed herself for... the crew. Captain Freeman discloses during the funeral service that Mariner is her daughter, while Boimler is watching, and says she would have court-martialed and kicked anyone off the ship that found this out. So Boimler's like, come on, program! Because he's bad at keeping secrets, of course. Mariner busts in here after the program ends and opens the door and says, like, are you okay? He's like, yeah.
Oh man, this is, you know, this is why he gets that statue in the future.
Yes, Yes. We kind of cut to the interview itself that he's been trying to prepare for this whole time. And I forget what Freeman asks him, but he calls Mariner hot and then freaks out and leaves.
She's nasty.
It's amazing. It's the, where do you see yourself in 5 years? That was the question.
Mariner. Mm-hmm. Yes. Freeman says he was totally unprepared. Terrible interview. And then we cut back to the holodeck and Mariner Vindicta rises again, but ends up getting shot by Da Vinci. And he's like, not on Da Vinci's watch.
Very much a
Spock.
Search for Spock reference. Yes. There. And then Da Vinci, of course, from Voyager.
Yep. Beautiful scene. Look at that.
Would have been great if they could have got John Rhys Davies back just to do that voice.
Oh, agreed.
Yeah.
That would have been great continuity.
Yeah.
Well, this afterwards was... we get the great title sequence.
Oh yeah, beautiful. So what do we know what Star Trek movie
Star Trek
does
six.
Cursive? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Star Trek the actors six, signing they do their sign off. And that was what influenced the Avengers Endgame sign offs at the end of Endgame. Kevin Feige is a bomb Star Trek fan. Mm-hmm. Pulled it directly from Star Trek six.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just an absolutely beautiful episode. Episode 9 of Lower Decks season 1, Crisis Point.
So. Only one episode left.
One episode. It's fast season. Season went quickly. Yes.
Yes.
Such a strong season so far.
It has been.
I'm in love. I love the show. It's so beautiful. I even recommended it to my husband. I was like, I know you're not a Trek person, but you really love like F is for Family and like a bunch of other like animated adult shows, and I think you would really love this, so I'm gonna try and get him to watch it. Any final thoughts before we sign off for the day?
I think we nailed them all, man.
Yeah,
I think it had a reference from every movie. The only one I can't find a really strong one for is the Star Trek Whales 4, right? Voyage Home. I can't think of a good Voyage Home reference, but otherwise everything's covered.
They can beam anything in movies. Whales.
Oh, that's true. That's fair. Whales.
We had been getting a lot of references for the TV series up till now, excuse me. And this one just took a lot of movie references, packed it in to catch up, to kind of make it, you know, even it out. And one thing that I think this is probably going to be, I have a feeling picked up either in the season finale or the second season, but I am detecting a possible, slap me if I'm wrong, thing between Billups and Rutherford that's not going to be necessarily completely plutonic. And to me, what seems a little bit uncomfortable with that is just the superior officer and a subordinate kind of relationship thing. You know, if they're going to go there with the two male romance, sure, no problem with that. It's just, it seems like, all right, I'm hoping they're not going that route with it, with a subordinate
person of authority.
Yeah, person of authority. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Person of authority and subordinate, the kind of thing, because that's to me, I know it's been done before, seems a little bit wrong. I could be completely wrong that they're hinting at that, but I was getting some very heavy vibes that was like where it's going.
I agree entirely.
Yeah. So
there with you.
We'll have to see.
I can't say I picked it up, but I was looking at it completely as just like admiration.
Oh, no, it's getting laid on pretty thick.
At the end there, right when they were doing the closeouts on the planet, I think that was pretty hinted at. Though I don't know if Star Trek has ever had Starfleet's ever had a rule about you can't date between the ranks. I don't know if they've ever really.
They don't.
Done that.
Like Starfleet doesn't care. I think.
I mean,
canonically.
Leilana and Tom.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, right. Riker Troy and Troy. And Riker. I think. And Picard even says like he doesn't get involved, I think, and stuff like that at one point. I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up. But yeah, I didn't really pick that up. I viewed it as very like platonic, but very interesting. And we'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah, just keep an eye on it.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much for watching along with us and listening along with us today. We have one episode left for the first season of Lower Decks coming at you next week. If you want to find us online to support us, you can find us on patreon.com/beyondtrek. We would love your support there. If you want to talk to us online, check us out on Twitter at Beyond Trek Pod and Instagram at Beyond Trek Podcast. And of course, we have a Facebook at facebook.com/beyondtrekproductions. I want to give a very special shout out to Stephanie Baker, a Patreon and Anchor donator, as well as Jim Cook, an Anchor donator as well. So thank you. We love you and we appreciate your support. And Renzo, thank you so much for joining us today as a special guest. We loved having you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We should do this more often, having special guests on. I think that was that was great. Thanks for joining us, Renzo, and helping us just get even deeper into the references and so forth. I could sit here and listen to you and Dag just go all day.
Yeah,
well, all of us. I mean, it could be a full day of just nerding out on Star Mortal Trek. Combat. Like Mortal Kombat, you're right.
Let me just pencil it into my schedule, though.
Mortal Kombat with lots of hugs, because there's no combat. It's just hugging.
Yeah.
Right. Note to self, Mortal Kombat with hugging.
We are Beyond Trek Podcast. Lower your inhibitions and surrender your years. We will add inspirational and hilarious Trek content to your day. Your attention will adapt to subscribe to us.